CNN Radio, I'm Paul Chambers. As flights resume at the airport in St. Louis, victims of Friday night's storm are still trying to pick up the pieces. CNN's Andrew Spencer reports many storm survivors are looking for temporary shelter.
Victims like Brianna McIntyre don't have a place to stay now. The storm destroyed her home.
I was in the basement when it happened. When I came upstairs, it was unrecognizable. I had no idea that the damage would be that extensive.
The American Red Cross says twice as many people stayed in shelters last night than they did the night before.
You know, when the sun came up, people really had a chance to see the damage, and they didn't realize the extent of the damage.
After making sure everyone has food, water, and shelter, volunteers are now helping with damage assessment. Andrew Spencer, CNN.
Residents forced to evacuate by a huge wildfire west of Fort Worth, Texas, have had the chance to return home to inspect the damage.
We're going to take a bunch of pictures for the insurance and then start sifting and see if there's anything we can put in some of our tubs and bring back home.
Over 1.4 million acres in Texas has burned so far. Libya's government had said its troops were withdrawing from the besieged coastal city of Misrata, but witnesses say they haven't completely left yet. Also, eight rebels were killed this weekend in an attack on a Libyan oil pumping station near Libya's border with Egypt. Easter Sunday Mass is celebrated in Vatican City as tens of thousands of pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square. Pope Benedict XVI called for an end to the fighting in Libya. The Memphis Grizzlies beat San Antonio 91-88 last night to take a 2-1 lead in their first-round NBA playoff series. Saturday's other NBA winners, Portland, Indiana, and Oklahoma City. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
The Home Depot has the only interior paint rated number one 2 years in a row. Behr Premium Plus Ultra Paint and Primer in one. So, those stripes on the living room wall? Covered. Kitchen's burgundy walls need a lighter shade? Covered in about half the time, leaving you with years of beautiful true color. Thanks to the only interior paint that's rated number one, Behr Premium Plus Ultra. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Paint rated by leading consumer study. See store for details.
If you've ever wanted to design your own ring, there's only one place to go.
That's Jared!
At Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, it's easy to create a ring that's yours and yours alone. First, choose from hundreds of beautiful settings. Then select from thousands of certified diamonds, including the Peerless Diamond, the Ideal Cut Diamond, and the Spectacular Leo Artisan, both exclusively at Jared.
It can only be Jared!
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-600-9067 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue your current eating habits. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-600-9067. That's 1-800-600-9067. 1-800-600-9067.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Do you think you're getting your money's worth for your life insurance policy? Because if you're 40 and married and are paying more than $14 a month, chances are you're paying too much. Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. And if you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free no-obligation quote. Call 1-800-600-2804. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 75% on their term life insurance. See how much we could save you. It only takes 5 minutes and you could save up to 75%, and the call is absolutely free. Call Matrix Direct, 1-800-600-2804. That's 1-800-600-2804. 1-800-600-2804.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. My name is Mike Banyan. I'm your host, and I am joined by my co-host, David Taylor of Bank of America. We have a great lineup of guests for you today, including Lynn Ann Casey, CEO of Arc Espicio, Mike Waddell, and Mike Stableski. They are managing partners and co-founders of Integrity One Partners. Dave Aldrich, CEO of Red Inc., and lastly, Dr. Hanny Malik. Dr. Hanny Malik is the chairman and founder of Suntiva. Let me introduce to you our first guest, Lynn Ann Casey. Lynn Ann is the CEO of a company called Arc Espicio. Lynn Ann, welcome. And what is Arc Espicio? Let me try that again. Arc Espicio.
We are a management consulting and information technology company that focuses on homeland security and intelligence.
Okay, and since I butchered your name butchered the company name to start, is there a story behind the company name Arc Espicio?
There is. Arc is for business architecture, and Espicio means to see or to behold in Latin, so it's about architecting a vision for the future.
And how did you think up that name? Very interesting name.
Well, first, I'm a marketing person, so I wanted a name that started with an A. I come from Latin roots, went to a Jesuit university, and needed to come up with a unique name that caught people's attention.
It certainly caught my attention. How big or small is Arc Espicio?
We've got about 50 folks working on projects with the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay, and the company's been around for how long?
Since 2004.
And how did you twist their arm to give you a job there?
Well, I founded the company, so it was easy.
Okay. And you founded a company. Why?
I worked in a large consulting firm for 14 years, and I really wanted to get closer to the client, work more closely with the client. So I founded a company to really be able to have that option and work closely with the clients I wanted to work with.
Okay. What does it say about you that you had this desire to be really close with the client?
I'm really driven by the mission of Homeland Security, and so I wanted to be doing the work. I wanted to be very close to the work, and I set up the business model of the company so that everybody in the company could always be very close to the work.
Okay. Now, you said you're really driven by Homeland Security. Was there any sort of an event that compelled you to focus your efforts on Homeland Security?
Well, there's sort of the foundation. My family has a history in law enforcement. My uncle was a warden at Rikers Island, and my brother was an NYPD sergeant. So I have an entire history of law enforcement. After many years in consulting, I started to work with a predecessor of the current Customs and Border Protection Agency, U.S. Customs Service. And I got the opportunity to tour a port of entry at Long Beach in Los Angeles, one of the world's busiest ports. And yeah, it was an amazing, amazing experience for me. The complexity of the challenge and the need to secure the ports without slowing down economic activity and trade.
You say it was an amazing experience. Intellectually, it was an amazing experience. Emotionally, it was amazing. Tell us more about that.
Well, first of all, when you walk, the ports are huge and massive, and you just can't even understand the amount of containers that come through those ports unless you stand in the middle of one while it's in action. So it was intellectually an unbelievable challenge, how you could track those containers and figure out what was coming in, how to secure it, and how to keep that port moving. And there's no land, so they do it in an unbelievable way.
So what happened to you on that day?
I just really realized that this is what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to secure our transportation network, secure our borders, and protect the country from terrorists exploiting, cargo and travel mechanisms.
So you're telling me this was a no turning back, I have found my mission in life sort of event?
Absolutely.
Wow, that is incredible. So you had mentioned that you grew up in a law enforcement family. I'm guessing then that you thought you were going to be a law enforcement officer. Is that right?
No, I didn't even know that was a. I didn't even know that was an option. I always thought I could be a teacher or a lawyer.
Now, why did you think that?
Well, I always liked to write. My entire life, I loved to write, and so my parents and my schools told me that. Well, if you like to write, then you're either going to be a teacher or a lawyer.
Was that okay with you? Or you just thought, okay, I'm going to go with the flow?
I didn't know anything different. I went with the flow.
Okay. And then what happened? So you've grown up thinking teacher or lawyer. Tell us what happened next at college, for instance.
At university. I was working for a I was working as first a writer and then the news editor of the newspaper, and then I became editor of the newspaper, and I realized that I liked running the business of the newspaper more than I liked the editing. I was a perfectly good editor. I still do a lot of writing today, but I really was driven by the running of the business, so I grew that business in college.
Yeah, LaDan, was there anyone in your family that you mentioned you're into the socialization part of this as well? Anyone in your family that drove that piece of it either for you? Or?
Yeah, certainly my dad was a really big influence for me. He was an incredible networker and had amazing relationships no matter where he went. And I think back now that was a really big influence. At the time, I was just always amazed that my father knew everyone when we walked anywhere. We could go halfway around the world and my dad would find someone he knew.
So how did that impact you?
I think it really showed me the value of relationships and long-term relationships. And building the relationship for the sake of the relationship, not for any one particular business transaction or particular reason, just building the relationships because they lead to interesting places.
You know, talking about your dad, and he had told you either teacher or lawyer, you obviously ended up doing something neither. Was that okay with him?
It was very okay with him, actually. I went into business. He actually got me, through his relationships, many different job interviews. So I had so many job options. I could have gone into banking, which he did. I could have gone into publishing, which he had relationships in. But I really chose my own path. I went into consulting. And he was perfectly excited about it. He was excited that I was going into business.
You'd use the phrase, I chose my own path, and it made me think of a situation with the college newspaper. So tell us about the college newspaper and how that shaped you and maybe your defining characteristic.
When I started with the newspaper, we were an independent organization from the university, and they had no control over the newspaper. We were just a small business. And we really had a lot to say. It was a time when the university was growing a lot. And the university tried to control what we were publishing. They also wouldn't give us any funding. We were self-funding. So I had to grow the business, dramatically increase advertising revenues. When I started, there was one computer. We self-published. And so I, you know, quadrupled the number of computers, and we really grew that business, and now it's just a really great example of newspapers. And so that sort of changed my approach, and I guess started being the first example of me being an entrepreneur.
So give us another example of you being an entrepreneur, especially with this persistence and pushback that's maybe more current with your current company.
Well, I think that I'm incredibly persistent, and the more people that tell me that something can't be done, the more convinced that I am that it can be done. So on a recent project, we had won a new project, and the client was thinking about not going forward with their commitment for what we were going to do on that project, and I persisted through it, and in the last couple of weeks, it's really blossomed into the largest project for our company and is really a turnaround relationship story, and we're a key partner on that project now.
I'm guessing that your team had confidence the entire time that everything was going to be fine.
My team is always very supportive of me, and if I ask them to jump off a bridge, they will. Sometimes they doubt that we can do it, but there's always someone that says we can and helps to work with me to make it happen. So they're growing to be more persistent every day. I have a fantastic team. I couldn't ask for a better team.
What specifically do you do to pass on that character trait of persistence?
to your team?
Well, it's one of the company's core values, and the best way I could pass it on is by just being an example. And so every time my folks see an example of where persistence has paid off, they send me an email and they say, hey, here's another story of where persistence pays off. We like to say in the company, the score takes care of itself. And so they're always telling me stories now of how their persistence led to something, or how persistence across multiple people ended up in the result that we wanted.
What sort of mark would you like to leave as a result of your work with Arc Hospicio, and obviously targeted towards Homeland Security?
We want to make our borders safer. We want to keep terrorists off of airplanes. We want to have a fair and balanced immigration system. So we really want to make an impact on the mission of Homeland Security.
Well, and there are other people doing that very important work, but how is your contribution going to be unique to you?
Our persistence in getting the Department of Homeland Security and the Homeland Security missions to be one integrated mission versus many stovepipe missions, and our capability to do that and get people to come together with the relationships to really make security happen at the highest level, integrated across all the different agencies that perform individual Homeland Security missions.
So when you're able to do that at the end of your career, at the end of your life, when you're able to do that, how are you going to feel?
I'm going to feel great. I'm going to feel like I really contributed, and then I'm going to go write a book.
Really? And what's the book going to be about?
We haven't decided yet. I'm between writing a romance novel and writing a thriller based on Homeland Security and government contracting.
So the writing in you is not gone.
It's not gone.
It's still there somewhere.
It's still there, but I'm going to be a bestseller. So
fantastic. Can you give us the website, please, for Arc Hospicio?
www.arcaspicio.com. That's ArcAspicio.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lynn Ann. We've been speaking with Lynn Ann Casey, CEO of Arc Hospicio. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Taylor of Bank of America, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back after this important business spotlight. Hi, I'm Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Catherine Ryan.
Catherine, who are you with?
I'm with the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce.
And what is the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce?
We are Northern Virginia's premier membership and advocacy association specializing in government contracting.
Now, you've got something really big about to happen, and that's what you're here to talk about.
We do. We have exciting news. April 1st is the opening of the 9th Annual Greater Washington Government Contractor Awards application process.
And what is that?
The awards is a celebration of the achievements in the government contracting industry. It celebrates not only companies, but also the executives in the industry.
And you've been doing that for 9 years?
For 9 years now.
Okay, and what starts tomorrow?
Tomorrow starts the application process, the call for nominations to nominate both companies and executives for their achievements in the industry.
Okay, so what type of companies would be eligible to be nominated?
Really, any company. We recognize companies for their revenue growth, industry achievements, their corporate social responsibility. So if there's a company that you work with or you know, we encourage people to get on our website and nominate a company.
Why is this so exciting to you?
I think it's exciting because it's an opportunity for us to celebrate all that government contractors do for the country, for our greater Washington area. There's really so much to be excited about and be proud of what the industry does for this country and for our area.
Okay. If someone wanted to nominate a company, there's a website I'm assuming that they would go to. What's the web address?
The web address is govconawards.com.
Okay, give us that one more time.
Once again, it's govconawards.com.
We've been speaking with Catherine Ryan of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper of the Bank of America. And I'd like to introduce to you two gentlemen, both named Mike, Mike Waddell and Mike Stableski. Both the Mikes are co-founders and managing partners of a company called Integrity One Partners. Mike, either one of you, what is Integrity One Partners?
Well, Integrity One Partners is a management IT consulting firm based in Northern Virginia, and we have offices in Washington, D.C. We serve targeted civilian agencies within the federal government, mainly Homeland Security and Health and Human Services, Veterans Affairs are our main client base. Okay.
And how big or small is Integrity One?
About 80 people right now.
Okay.
And consultants, I should say.
And the company was founded when?
2000.
And why did you guys found a company together?
We wanted to make a difference. We wanted to found a firm where we would attract a great talent pool that could really bring value to our clients and create a workplace where people wanted to make a difference and felt like they could make a difference.
Okay, you talked about making a difference. Let's focus on that word different. This is different than the environment that you were in before you started your company, if I understand that. Tell us a little bit about that.
So both Mike and I have a background with other consulting firms, larger consulting firms, and in those firms, you do kind of feel like a number. I know it's a cliche, but you are just part of a herd, and there are what you can offer in a smaller company is a little bit better work-life balance and certainly more attention to the individual. And that's what we were after, kind of having people come to work with us, provide them an opportunity to work at a place that cared about them, cared about their families, cared about their communities.
So the biggest difference for you experientially in having your own company is what?
Well, to serve our clients and our the people who work for us. I mean, we really want to take care of our people. And that includes the people who work for us and our clients, and bringing value to both.
Okay,
you know, providing a place where they can grow, and our employees can grow in their careers, and our clients feel like, hey, these guys really bring me value.
Now, you guys are lifelong buddies, and you always wanted to start a business together, or is the story a little bit different?
It's quite a lot different.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're talking now to Mike W. Mike W., tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
So I grew up, my father was in the Air Force, so we moved around quite a bit. You know, just about, you know, every year we were moving someplace different. And so I was always kind of moving into an area where I had to make friends quickly and kind of learn about the area that I was in and the things to do in those areas.
Was that a good thing or a bad thing in your mind, moving around a lot?
Well, now I think it's a very good thing. I think at the time it was just normal. I don't know that I thought it was good or bad. It was just the way we lived,
yeah.
And so now I believe it's a very good thing.
Was there something that you would do or become a part of in each of these new places that helped you to assimilate into the group?
Sure. So I have a very competitive personality, and most business people do, I'm
yes.
sure. So it was, for me, it was sports. I craved that, the competitive spirit. I wanted to challenge myself and go up against people that I thought were better than me.
Yeah. So you always thought you were going to start a business, is that
no,
right?
No, I didn't. It really wasn't something that really occurred to me until much later in life.
Okay. Well, when exactly did it occur to you?
1995.
What happened?
I was working for a consulting firm, and somebody offered me a position over at another company as a consultant, and at the time, I was making $32,000 a year, thought that I was doing great, and they offered me $35 an hour, which, you know, you do the math, and it's about twice as much.
Mm-hmm.
And so they offered me pretty much a lifestyle change, really.
And you felt like you could take it. Why? You were confident? You were nervous? You had a big bank account
on? It was the next move, right? So growing up, you move from place to place in the Air Force, and that was my next move. It was time to move on and meet new people and face new challenges.
Yeah, I kind of want to focus on that for a moment. In the green room, you said it was time for a change, time for a new set of people, and that did sound a lot like your experience growing up. So in what way did that moving around shape you and prepare you for going out on your own?
When you're forced to meet new people, you're kind of forced to be, whether you're introverted or extroverted, you're forced to meet new people. If you want to have a good time wherever you are and you want to grow as an individual, you're forced to meet new people and fit into their groups and kind of and work together with them. And that's what that offered me, that move into the other.
Yeah, got it. Mike S., tell us about your upbringing.
I grew up in southeast Pennsylvania, outside of Reading, Pennsylvania. It was a very much a blue-collar town. You had to learn to grew up in a blue-collar family and a working-class family, and you had to learn to work to get ahead, work hard. And so I had a work ethic very early on, instilled from my father.
And your father did what?
My father was a brick mason. He was known as one of the best brick masons because he took pride in his craft.
And your mom?
My mom was a homemaker, but she also did some side work to bring extra income into the family.
So she had a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit.
She had a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit, yes. She rubbed off on her son.
And I gather that in the eighth grade, you discovered yours.
In eighth grade, we had an economics class. We were tasked to develop a small companies and come up with products, and we had to come up with a product. We had to market them. We had to sell them, and our company had to happen to do very well, and it created what I call the mustard seed to be an entrepreneur.
So this came naturally. This was a big stretch for you. What was it?
It was natural. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just enjoyed it. I felt very, very fulfilling to be able to come up with a product, work with folks to devise that product, to sell it, and to the success of the company. Not so much from back then, it wasn't a monetary thing, just doing what you thought was right.
Yeah. Most eighth graders are not terribly entrepreneurial. So I'm guessing that maybe you were a little bit different growing up. Maybe you didn't fit the norm.
Norm. No, I was never wanted to go into cliques. I could certainly hang with different cliques, but and there was trials and errors to that. Sometimes you stepped outside who you were to fit in, and you learned that if you weren't authentic, you couldn't really work effectively across those groups. So you had to learn to be authentic and really be confident in who you were.
So are you one person who's just very adaptable, or are you sort of a mosaic of several different people, and therefore you can fit in with lots of different kind of groups?
I would say there's a core to who I am, of my beliefs and my values, but I will certainly adapt to the environment that I'm in without altering from my core values.
Okay, and we're going to come back to that core values a little bit later in the interview. How did you guys get together?
We were both working at separate firms, and there was an opportunity that came up at a particular agency. And so Mike and I kind of met through some mutual friends and started working together to put together some sort of proposal to go after this work. And we didn't end up getting the work, but what we did learn was that we respected each other, and there was a lot of trust between the two of us. So we decided to stay in touch and look for other opportunities together.
How did you really know? I mean, really, really know that I can trust this guy and this is a good fit for me? I'll let either one of you answer that
question. I think actions speak louder than words. When we were pursuing this opportunity, there was you know, the way we pursued it was with integrity and putting, you know, the needs of our clients first. I could sense in Mike W. that, you know, this man was a person that you could trust.
How do your two skill sets complement each other? Who does what? How does that work at the company?
You know, we struggled with this for a number of years. We're both, you know, fairly independent, fairly strong-willed people, and we both wanted to be involved in all aspects of the company. You know, we're really excited. We're working long days together. We're working hard, and, you know, 90% of the time, 95% of the time, things are great, but then he wants to do it one way, I want to do it the other. What we found was that there are just aspects to our personalities that are better suited to certain areas of the business. And once we said, well, this is what I'm really passionate about, and Mike said, this is what I'm passionate about, we just kind of split those things up. So what he was really passionate about, I just said, you know what, he can make all those decisions. I'll make the decisions on these things over here that I'm passionate about. As long as we keep those communication lines open, it works.
Is it easy to keep the communication lines open?
By the most part, I would say yes. There are challenges in that communication, but, you know, we know that for us to be effective and to be successful, we have to keep those lines of communication open.
What we found is over the years, we need to kind of get away from the office just a little bit and spend time together, not just as business people, but as friends, and kind of reacquaint ourselves with why it is that we're in business with each other.
Yeah. Another thing you have in common is a belief and faith in God and a higher purpose to what you're doing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think the faith really... it's my foundation. It gives me that strength, the courage, and the wisdom to persevere. Running a business is very challenging, and that it really gives you the perseverance to challenge through, to make it through those challenges with a fierce resolve, yet not only with a fierce resolve, but with integrity at the end.
You mentioned that, and we're speaking to Mike S. right now, you mentioned that you'd come to renew your faith, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, when you were 30?
In my mid-30s. And that's really gave me the courage to strike out and really look to starting a business. It was more of my late 30s.
What happened?
Just went through a period in life. I went through a divorce, unfortunately, and it really made me re-examine my life. It was an unexpected event, and I renewed my faith. And with that renewal of faith, I developed a lot of unknown courage in me. So.
Wow. Thank you. How about you, Mike W.?
I grew up in a fairly religious family. You know, every Sunday we went to church, and so it just was kind of part of my normal upbringing. And then in my mid-teens, My mother struggled with bipolar, and she attempted to commit suicide. And it was a very rough time for the whole family, and the church was really kind of the community that they just kind of surrounded us. And watching my father be a very devout Christian certainly spoke very strongly to me.
In what way does that drive the way you run the company?
It certainly makes decisions a lot clearer.
How so?
There is a true right and a true wrong, and in between are varying shades of gray. And and I don't want to put words in Mike's mouth here, but what our faith does is it helps us delineate between what we really should be doing and what we shouldn't. It kind of keeps you on a straight and narrow path.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And it really gives us a certain, that kind of, I talked earlier about a servant mentality. We're really here to, you know, serve the people we work for and serve our clients. You know, it's putting those people first ahead of ourselves. And that's what really, I think, drives our success.
Yeah. Would you give us the website, please, for Integrity One Partners?
It's www.ionep.com.
Okay, I want to make sure everyone gets that. Would you give it to us one more time, please?
Certainly. www.ionep.com.
Thanks, Mike. We've been speaking with Mike Waddell and Mike Stableski. Mike's are co-founders and managing partners of a company called Integrity One Partners. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America, for helping me structure the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight. Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Arlen Feldman.
Arlen, who are you with?
I am the marketing manager of Washington Management Group and Fed Sources.
Two companies. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. Washington Management Group provides GSA schedule consulting, and they are the parent company to Fed Sources, which is the leading market intelligence service provider.
Well, what is market intelligence services?
If you need to buy or sell to the federal government, we can help you do that. We help you succeed in the federal government.
Well, why is that important work that you do?
You know, it's very important in this industry because, obviously, with constricting budgets and people needing to use their time and energy effectively, we can help them provide that kind of service when they need to know more information about the specific opportunity or where they should approach the government next. We can help them with that sort of intelligence and insight in the industry.
Now, why are you better than anybody else at doing this?
You know, we like to say that our service is really what makes us different. We provide a service to our clients, and they know they can call us with whatever questions they might have. We don't just give them a login to a database and say, okay, you're on your own. You know, we really have their back, and we really help them decide and help make these tough decisions and really help them grow and really, really tailor where they need to go with some of their time.
You in particular, Arlen, what do you love most about doing this?
You know, I love the company. I love being able to say that I work for an honest corporation. You know, I really admire some of the senior managers that I work with. I think they have a fabulous story in the government industry, and I like to know that I'm working with a great group of people that are helping a variety of people in this industry succeed.
In just a few words, what's a great company for you to work with?
We have a lot of partners, the Coalition for Government Procurement. They're a wonderful organization. You should check them out, too.
And give us your website, please, Arlen.
All right. WashMG and FedSources.com.
Thank you very much. That was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper of the Bank of America. And I'd like to introduce you to our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Dave Aldrich. Dave is the CEO of a company called Red Ink. Dave, what is Red Ink?
Red Ink is Research and Engineering Development Incorporated. Red Ink.
And just so there's no confusion, what is Red Ink not?
There's no red ink on these statements. Hopefully, not yet.
So again, give us the words and the acronym again.
Research and Engineering Development Inc.
Okay, and what
Red
does,
Ink.
And that is targeted at what customer group?
Well, it really represents the fact that we are research-oriented, and we are teamed with engineers, and we are scientists, for lack of a better term.
Sure. And how big or small is Red Ink?
We're about 80 folks.
Okay, and Red Ink has been around for how long?
Founded in 1998 by its original founders.
And those people are not you?
They are not me.
Okay.
The team of us came in new to the company, acquired a majority interest in the company back in July of last year. And the original founders are still there working with us and hopefully enjoying life very much.
Okay. So the original founders felt comfortable enough with you to sell you their company.
Yes.
Did you throw a whole bunch of cash at them, or was there something else that compelled them to turn it over to you?
No, cash really didn't come up until late in the process. The whole thing about our approach and my approach is to make sure that, it's all about people. And when we go into a company, if you're just managing it or buying it or working in a company, you know, it's all about the people. And they were very concerned. Obviously, it was their baby that they were turning over to somebody, and that turned out to be us. So the fit, the personality fit, was very important to them, and they wanted to make sure that we were going to run the company as they did, you know, customer-oriented, mission-oriented. And it took us a while, and we talked it through, and we finally got comfortable with each other that we were going to continue with that mission.
So some of the personality traits that they found agreeable in you were what?
I think commitment to the customer, commitment to the mission. My background is government contracting, and you know, at the end of the day, it's all about mission. And the folks that we support are very active. I mean, they're overseas, and we need to get it right. They know that from the beginning. They used to be on the civilian side, lifelong Navy civil servants who then started their own business. So to them, it's all about mission, and I agreed with that, and they believed me that we were committed to that.
What were you doing prior to buying Red Ink?
I was on sabbatical, semi-retired.
Really? What does that mean?
It means we had a group of us that owned a company previously that we had purchased back in 2003. We sold it in 2007, and without any foresight as to what I would do after that sale, I had nothing to do, so I went home, and my wife put me to work.
Now, you told us earlier that you needed to recharge.
I did.
To tell us a little bit about that and why.
Well, I had worked all my life. I came from a family business and grew up in that business, and really from day one coming out of school, I graduated from college on a Tuesday and went to work on Wednesday. Mostly money-driven, but that was a good incentive at the time. And it's just been a constant connection with the workplace since then. So coming at the end of 2007, the group of us, we were focused on the objective, which was to sell the company to a company that was going to continue our mission, you know, all the things that we just touched on. And once it was over, I realized I hadn't made any plans about what do I do after that.
You told us that you came from a family with a family business. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was, I don't remember all of it, but I do know the stories. My father worked for Alcoa. He was regional sales director for Alcoa, which was a big job out of Chicago. And I grew up outside Chicago. And when I was about 9 years old, it was 1968, he came home and he told my mother that he had quit his job. And she flipped out, to use a discreet term. Mm-hmm. And he was just 1 year short of his pension, which she wasn't very happy about. But he had come across an opportunity to buy some swim clubs, swim and tennis clubs, of which he knew nothing about operating. But he thought it would be a great opportunity. He wanted to be in business for himself. And he made the plunge without talking to my mother and announced it to the family. And we were in business from then on in the family business.
We're going to dig in a little bit more on that, but I got a question for you first. Yeah. In retrospect, what do you think of your dad? For making that bold move or crazy move or whatever you think it is?
I question his not talking to my mother, but that aside, no, I can relate to that. I mean, I spent some time in big companies, and I know what he went through. I mean, based on my experience now, I didn't know then, obviously, but he wanted to get off on his own and control his own destiny and, you know, work for himself.
And you're speaking from experience that you went through that same emotional plight of working for a big company and wanting to get out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely did. I came up in the accounting profession in the early 80s, then went on to investment banking, both on the agency side and on the capital side. So I worked with a lot of people inside these big companies helping other people do things like buy companies. And from an early point in doing that, I realized that I wanted to eventually do this myself one day for myself.
Yeah.
And that's what led me to the D.C. area and the opportunity that we pursued there.
Got it. Well, let's go back again to the family business.
Yep.
I'm assuming you worked there when you were young.
I did.
Doing what?
From day one. Anything I was told to do. Garbage collection, cutting grass. I mean, I was on a mower most weekends from about age 9 on up.
Wow. That must have been a burden, huh?
No. It was great. I mean, as we talked about earlier, it's that's the way our family spent time together, and that's the way most family businesses are, I think. It isn't work so much, it's just a family lifestyle. And you don't take that many vacations, but when you do, you're together as a family, but you're always thinking about the business. And when bad things happen at the business, everybody's aware of it and everybody pitches in. And you learn very, very quickly to understand and appreciate not only the good times, but when you come out of the bad times.
Who were your friends back then? Were they simply your family members? Or
Mostly family. I mean, obviously, I went to school and all that. I had, I was fourth of five, so I was way down the totem pole. That's why I got all the good jobs. But no, we had friends in the neighborhood and all of that, and a lot of my friends actually worked for us and with us at some point, you know, during our careers. But the clubs that we were running and the construction business we had was really centered on the community. So one of the clubs that we ran was the community club. And a lot of people say that must have been wonderful, working in a country club environment. Well, the key is working. Everybody else is enjoying. I'm working. So it really wasn't, you know, a grand lifestyle anyway. You know, it was, we were doing all the work while everybody else was hopefully having a good time.
When you graduated from college, were you expected to continue in the family business?
I was. It had always been assumed that I would go back to the family business. I'd worked there, obviously, for years. I have a great relationship with my father, and I really liked the business, particularly the construction side of the business, tennis courts, tracks, football fields, things like that. But I understood midway through college the downside or the risks associated with a family business. In 1979-ish, I was at college and preparing for exams in January. We had exams after Christmas. And he called me on the phone one day, and I answered the phone, and he said, "Hey, it's me." I said, "What's up?" He said, "Just want to check in." I said, "You don't just check in. What's going on? Something wrong with Mom?" He said, "No." And he went on to explain to me that the interest rates on our SBA loans, of which he had many, had just jumped from about 7% up to about 22-23% in the span of about a week. This was under the Carter administration. And he felt like he couldn't sustain that, and he felt like he was going to lose the business. And worst for me, he said, "I may not be able to keep you in school. You may need to come home." And I wasn't on any kind of financial aid at the time, so I said, "Sure, you know, just tell me what I need to do, and I'll be home, and I'll go back to work."
Why was that not a traumatic experience for you?
I think it was a traumatic experience for him. We talked about it years later, and you know, he pretty much put it out of his mind. I think he regretted calling me, but he's a pretty private guy. He didn't want to share that news with my mother, and I was the one most active in the business of all the kids. So I think he just needed somebody to talk to, and I was the one.
Well, why was that not a traumatic experience for you?
For me?
The prospect of having to drop out of college?
I knew I would end up going back, and I knew that if I had to go home and help, I could be helpful. And I knew with his resilience, you know, we'd get through it. I knew we would get through it, and I'd be back at some point. So it'd be a timing interruption, but I didn't think it would be devastating. We'd been through some tough times before, just normal business cycles as I look back now. But, yeah. You know, as a family, we'd learned to deal with those, although this was the worst.
Did I hear you say you were the only one of your siblings in the family business?
No, I was the one most active.
Yeah, the one most active.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Meaning the one, I was the one that liked it best.
Yet, at some point, you decided to move on and something else. Tell us about that conversation with your dad.
I did. Senior year, it was about a year later, senior year, I was thinking about, like my friends, about going to New York. Everybody else was interviewing, and it wasn't a great economic environment, kind of like we're in now, to find a job, but we were going through the interview process. And I actually landed a job, and it was in New York. It was for the accounting firm Coopers & Lybrand, and I didn't know anything about accounting, but it was a good job with a good firm, and they were going to help me with business school. But I had a decision to make. I thought I had a commitment to my father, so I decided I better go home and talk to him about it. So I didn't call him. I just hopped in the car and drove home. And I showed up in the morning, and my mother said he was out in the fields. We had a lot of fields around these clubs, and he was out working in the field, so I went out there. And he was digging up drain tile. Remember, we had planted willow trees, and the willow roots had gotten into the drain tile, and we had to dig those out. So I was helping him dig those out while he was wondering what I was doing at home. And, you know, I had exams in about 2 weeks, and he was really wondering what was going on. I said, "Look, you know, I got this job offer, and I wanted to come out and talk to you and hear what you had to say about it. You know, I need your permission to pursue this. I'd like it." And we talked about the opportunity, and remember, his background was Alcoa. It was a big company. He knew what that was like, and he was great. He said, "Take your shot. I'll always be here. The company will always be here. You can always come home. I hope that you won't. I hope it'll be successful, you know, but I'd gladly have you at any point in time. So don't worry about me. We'll be fine. We'll get through it. Take your shot." And I did.
And your dad ultimately thought of your success how?
Right now?
Yeah.
Oh, he thinks it's tremendous. He especially likes the fact that I've gotten away from the big companies and we're now dealing with small companies.
Yeah, fantastic.
You can appreciate that.
Dave, please give us the website for Red Ink.
It is red-inc, www.red-inc, or redinc.us.
Okay, let's try that one more time. That's quite all right.
I got to get my card out here again and look at it. Hold on a second.
Okay. Dave is now looking for his business card, and he's going to give us his website. But we've got it here for
him. It is www.red-inc.us.
One more time.
Red-inc.us.
Fantastic. We've been talking with Dave Aldrich, CEO of a company called Red Inc. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Cooper of the Bank of America, for helping me structure the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And we'll be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight.
Hi, this is Paul from the Potomac Companies bringing you your business spotlight. Joining us today is
Adele Sears.
And Adele, what company are you with?
Epic Media Relations.
Epic Media Relations. That sounds big. What do you do?
We're a full-service boutique PR firm, and we like to say we offer PR, marketing, and a touch of magic for our clients.
Full-service PR boutique.
That's right.
Translate that.
Essentially, we focus on understanding people, what makes them believe in a brand, an organization, a product. For example, we know that through studies, women are more likely to influence other women, and men are more likely to influence other men, but through nonverbal communication. So men like emails and women like person-to-person conversations.
Interesting. So you use that to help a company with their marketing strategies?
Pretty much. We understand people, and therefore we understand how to get in front of the right people, influence stakeholders, garner visibility, and build brands.
So who would be a typical client for you? What
well,
type of people,
it could
companies?
Be anywhere from DuPont, who's trying to increase the visibility for DuPont Corian, which is a countertop offering that they have.
And the women influence that one in the kitchen.
Right, exactly. So a consumer-based business like that. We also have a nonprofit organization that works with interns. And they were looking to become the go-to source for interns in Washington, D.C. And so we created an Intern Appreciation Week, and we got called Interns Rock. And we had MTV and area business development organizations, museums, restaurants offer discounts to interns for a week, and it was hugely successful.
Sounds like a fun place to work. What's the website? How do people reach you?
www.epicmediarelations.com.
Epicmediarelations.com. Great. Thank you very much.
This has
been Paul Smith. It is Paul Smith with the Potomac Companies with your business spotlight. Have a great day.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is Mike Mannion, your host, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper, of the Bank of America. And it is my pleasure to introduce to you our next guest, Dr. Hani Malik, chairman and founder of a company called Suntiva. May we call you Hani?
Please do.
Hani, what is Suntiva?
Mike, thanks for having me first. Suntiva is a management consulting company specializing in IT, federal acquisition, and organizational performance consulting. We're about 100 consultants strong, mm-hmm. And I think the biggest compliment I received from one of our clients is he described us as the Fortune 500 of small companies.
So that is a nice comment. And Suntiva was founded when?
I founded the company in 2002.
Okay, and is there a story behind the name?
Suntiva, I actually wanted something that reflects the values of the company, and the values of the company has to do with the our core values, so that we all believe in. So I wanted something that has roots in language. So Sunt is Latin, derivative Latin for powerful existence. And then I added the Tiva to it. And so Suntiva reflects the powerful existence. It's the kind of experience that we look forward to creating in a company, as well as the experience that we want to create for our clients as well. And then the first few words is sun, which I come from Egypt, so it was very convenient for me because we love the sun over there.
Well, this is pretty deep, and I know a little bit about you from a previous interview. Tell us what you were doing before founding Suntiva, because I think that partly explains the depth of thought that went into the name.
I came to founding Suntiva. I think my career was kind of preparing me to... I have several backgrounds, and they all kind of came together in one focal point, where Suntiva. I have a background in business, I have an MBA, and then I worked for a large management consulting company for many years. Some of you may know it, AMS, American Management Systems. then I ended up getting really interested in the human element of running large organizations. As how can leaders be really impactful in running successful organizations? So that took me in a about 7-year detour where I got my doctorate in clinical psychology and ended up actually being a clinical psychologist by training. But then back full circle to how can I take those powerful concepts that psychology can teach us about ourselves and about others and use it to help senior executives run effective organizations.
So you have this three-phased career. You have this blue-chip large consulting company career. That's phase one. Phase three is you have a blue-chip consulting company, management consulting company, like the Fortune 500 companies, which was the complement. But in between, for 7 years, you were a clinical psychologist. What gave you the courage or the zeal to make such a huge change?
I think one thing I learned about successful leaders is they really follow their passion, and they also follow what they are good at naturally. And when I was working at the AMS, I made an observation that really shaped the rest of my career, which is I studied projects and organizations that we were working with, whether internally or as clients, and realized that companies or organizations or projects fail or succeed not just because of the quality of the technology or the knowledge of their managers, but they really do fail or succeed based on the quality of the leaders that are leading the business. And so that made me really want to study the nature of human beings. If you know the difference between management and leadership, sometimes it's simply said by described as managers manage projects, but leaders lead people. So I really wanted to study the people aspect of it and then applying it to the operations.
What did you learn about yourself in those 7 years?
A lot about myself and my mother. That's what they study in, we study in psychology. But
what do you mean?
Well, you know, that was a joke. I think that's a stereotype that all psychologists do is talk about your parents, which is actually has a big truth to that. But what I learned is more of the nature of what makes executives and leaders successful. What I learned about myself is I wanted to do something that I genuinely enjoy and genuinely want to do, and then I wanted to be I want to create a special place for people to do the same thing.
You also mentioned previously something about authenticity, and that was a discovery that you had made about yourself and about leaders in general. Tell us more about authenticity, especially the discovery you made about yourself in those 7 years.
Realize that, and if you read literature in leadership development, we know that the most successful leaders are the ones that are congruent and transparent. Meaning that what's inside of them is what comes out to their employees as well as their clients. And this is a quality you really can't fake. It's either you have it or you don't. So transparency coupled with doing something that you genuinely are interested in doing, which is brings me back to my days of management consulting. So I wanted to do something that I'm genuinely interested in, which is helping senior executives run and senior leaders, government leaders, run effective organizations. So that's something I was genuinely interested in, coupled with the transparency or letting my thoughts and feelings known to my employees and my client, goes a long way in being a successful leader.
Tell us a little bit about your dad and how his life story impacted your life story.
Well, I thought I was the psychologist, but now you're going to make me talk about my dad. actually, this is a big part of where I got my some of the core values, transparency and genuineness, from my father. He was I grew up in Egypt, predominantly Muslim country, but my father actually was a priest, a Christian priest. So I grew up as the son of a priest in a predominantly Muslim country. And my father was the real priest, if you will. He's the kind of person that was the same in the church as he was at home. And it formed my early values for me, such as genuineness and the desire to help others and serve others. And those are some of the things that I took with me to form the company, but other things that I did in the past as well.
Now, your father was not just a caring, pastoral sort of person. He was that, but he was more, was he not?
He had a good story about this humbled priest in Egypt ended up being the presiding bishop for the entire Middle East for the Anglican Church, or the Episcopal Church, as we call it here in the U.S. He didn't really have any political aspirations or anything, but just because he, again, exhibited those qualities that I mentioned, he was passionate about serving others, but he also was genuine and caring, ended up being elected to a very senior level in the church, which also helped me to understand that intersection between, I grew up, observing him leading a large organization. So he became, from a priest, became a businessman, if you will. So that intersection between the church and the business of the church, I observed from early age, which also, I think, formed my interest in business.
So a lot of what he did was, his success was because of his strong listening skills and his caring of people.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign
That's
up for the
very
Federal
good
News
observation.
Flash
I think
federalnewsradio.com.
I was thinking about this. I think by the end of this interview, you'll probably find something what's in common between a priest, psychologist, and a business leader. And I think it's those qualities that you outlined, which is genuine and deep listening, the genuine desire to serve others and provide services, and also just being transparent.
Well, what is the greatest service you provide your people at Suntiva? Not what Suntiva provides to its customers, but you as the leader. What's the greatest service you provide?
I believe the greatest service I provide my people at Suntiva is help build a safe environment for them to be who they are. And really, genuinely, again, understand their strengths, because Suntiva is a strength-based company. We believe in focusing on what people are good at and leveraging it, and once you do that and take care of them consistently and meet their needs and serve them, then they'll take care of the client. And that formula has been proven very successful for us over and over again. We take care of our employees, they take care of our clients, and the clients will end up taking care of us by awarding us more business.
Henny, would you give us your website, please?
Website is www.suntiva.com, S-U-N-T-I-V-A.com.
We have been speaking with Dr. Henny Malik, chairman and founder of Suntiva. I would like to thank all of our guests today, Lynn-Ann Casey, CEO of Arcospicio, Mike Waddell and Mike Stableski, co-founders and managing partners of Integrity One Partners, Dave Aldrich, CEO of Red Ink, and of course, most recently, Dr. Henny Malik, chairman and founder of Suntiva. I'd also like to thank my co-host, David Taylor of Bank of America, for helping me structure the interviews, hopefully providing an interesting and educational experience. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, the listening audience. If it was not for you, we wouldn't even have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We've been broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting the local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com, or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.